Well, you're welcome. Frank Alcoholic. Let me see if I can figure this out here. I don't know where I am on the screen here, but.
We see you.
Can you see me?
Yeah.
Maggie?
You're right here. Just start talking.
Okay. So I have a sobriety date. That's important for me. My sobriety date is July 24th of 1976. And I'm blessed to have that sobriety date. I don't know where, if you folks have a pencil or a paper, but you all know what your sobriety date is, each and every one of you. And as a result of that, perhaps you can give a little purpose or a little thought. For an example, mine is July 24th of 1976. My wife's is 6789. Now, I don't know what you folks were doing the day before you got sober.
Today.
Or 2 days before you got sober. I'm not sure what it was that took you from drunk and disorderly into Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'll share my experience, strength, and hope with you and tell you that I'm glad each and every one of you is here. I'm one of those kind of alcoholics, if you will, that even though I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot continually rely on what happened to me yesterday to maintain any level of sobriety. I only get right now. I just get right here and right now. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and my mother and father both died of complications related to alcoholism. And when you grow up in one of those houses, a lot of stuff happens, doesn't it? And I grew up in the same town that Chris was born in. We were both born in San Jose, California. And I was always one of those kids that always wondered what was going on. And I probably needed Allotop is probably what I needed back then, but there wasn't any such thing. And so as I grew up in the alcoholic home, a lot of different stuff happened. And my mother drank Thunderbird, and my dad drank Paisano wine. And it just wasn't a good deal. And for a long time, I thought the reason that I was an alcoholic was simply because both my parents died of alcohol-related issues and going and up an alcoholic. But that for me is not the reason I'm an alcoholic. There was a time in my life when I thought that because I was a United States Marine in Vietnam, I'm a United States Marine combat veteran from Vietnam. I spent 13 months in Vietnam. But I'm not the only guy in this meeting that has been in those situations. But for a long period of time, what I tried to figure out was maybe that's it. Maybe that's the reason I'm an alcoholic is because I was in the Marine Corps and because I was in Vietnam. Only to find out that the true reason I'm an alcoholic is because I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. But I didn't know that until I got here. I didn't know that. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I thought I knew a lot about alcoholism, but I knew very little about alcoholism until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And still sometimes I wonder at almost 44 years of sobriety if I know very much at all. I wonder each and every day the gifts that this wonderful God gives us and allows us to have the opportunity to live one day at a time. But when you grow up in one of those alcoholic homes, a lot of stuff happens, and I won't bore you with all that, but I used to come home at night after work, and I'd find my little sister hiding in the bushes in the front, and my mother would be off with her boyfriend drinking Paisano wine, and my father had disappeared, And I was in high school and I was lost and I didn't know what to do. They would call me and I would go to Harbor General Hospital and I'd see my father laying in a hospital in an alcoholic state or form, if you will, all plugged in with pancreatitis and swelled up in his tummy, and they'd have to tap him like a keg of beer and drain the fluid off him, and he'd be gone for days. And thank God I found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because I don't have to live that way. What an amazing thing we have today. What a wonderful gift for those of us that are sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous today. So And when I was in high school, I led three lives. I was this all-star athlete, and I started drinking in high school, and I ran around with this Letterman jacket, and it had a football and wrestler on it, but I didn't want you to know where I lived. I didn't want you to know that I lived over on Virginia Street in the house that had duct tape on the floors and had wine bottles in the back in the can. And so I would make up stories, and I would become anything that I thought that I needed to become so that I could become something different than what I was. And I also had this auto supply business. Well, we were stealing cars is what we were doing. And we got caught, but I've had angels in my life, my entire life. I just didn't know that they were there. And this was kind of like the second sighting that I had, but I couldn't tell you that that's what this was. And the officer that arrested me had arrested me and he took me to he went to my house and arrested me with these auto parts and he went to court for me, and he told the judge, he said, you know, judge, if you put this kid in jail, you'd be putting the wrong kid in jail. He said, this is a pretty good young man here, and we need to try and help him. And I had these football coaches that were angels, and they helped me along all the time, but as confusing as it was. So I continued to, I started my drinking age, and I started hurting people, and one thing led to another, and the Vietnam conflict came over, and I joined the United States Marine Corps, and I went into the Marine Corps in March of 1966. And back then, you get off a bus, and then they had these little yellow footprints on the ground, and at the Marine Corps base, and there was these little yellow footprints, and you put your feet in these yellow footprints, and you're looking up. And I don't know if any of you guys ever watched that movie Full Metal Jacket, but that was my real drill instructor. That guy was Arlie Ermey was my drill instructor. And Kirk knows what those yellow footprints look like. The Uniform Code of Military Justice is on the wall up there. And I looked up there, and they got us off this bus, and they started screaming at us. And I leaned over to my buddy Bob, and I said, Bob, we may have screwed up here. And a little while later, a couple months later, we were on our way. We'd gone through jungle school, and we were in Vietnam, and I drank every time I got the chance. And when I was in Vietnam, I was an air crewman on a gunship, and I flew 150 night missions in and out and around, all around North Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia. And that's not the reason I'm an alcoholic. The reason I'm an alcoholic is because I believe I suffer from a disease of a threefold nature. One where I have the kind of body that doesn't process alcohol. I'm physically addicted to alcohol. I have an allergy of the body, and I have a mental illness, as the book talks about. And I can't overcome either one of those until I can overcome something spiritually. But I didn't know that then. I thought the more you drank, the better, the more it changed you feel. And I kept drinking, and I came home, and I was a mess, and life was a mess. And back then, they didn't welcome me home. Different people tried to, you know, the story. But that's a long time ago in a land far, far away. I've had to let all those resentments go. And I've learned through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that was my life then. And did it happen? Absolutely, it happened. Can I change it? Absolutely not. So I kept drinking, and I married this starry-eyed chick that I met in high school. And now I'm drinking, and my drinking's getting worse. And we got married, and now I'm starting to do things that I don't want to do. And now I'm starting to become a taker. And I'm living two lives again. The Marine Corps was promoting me, but I'm drinking. And there's times when you can't stand yourself. So I continued to drink and got out of the Marine Corps. And we moved back to Linwood, California. And I continued to drink, and I acted up. And I got in a car wreck one night. I was on my way home, and I can tell you that at 6 o'clock that morning when I left for work, it wasn't my idea to run into the back of a car with a family, a station wagon with a family full of kids coming home from a movie that night. That was not my idea at 6 o'clock in the morning. If you would have asked me, is that what you're going to do tonight, put two children in the hospital? I would have told you absolutely not. That's not the kind of guy I am. But that's what happened. And after I was arrested that night, I swore off. You guys ever swear off? I'm never drinking again. That's it. Draw those lines in the sand. I'm never doing that again. That's the end of it. I never want to put people in danger. But Father Terry woke me up one day about 20 years ago. He's talking and he said, anybody that's willing to drive drunk is willing to commit vehicular manslaughter. I thought, Father Terry, I don't know if any of you have ever heard Father Terry, but he's a wonderful man. He's a sober priest in Los Angeles. And I thought about that and I thought, wow. But I drank, and I drank in a lot of different places, and disco was going on. I had a burnt orange leisure suit. I don't know if any of you guys have pictures of Uncle Larry or Uncle Joe or whoever it might be, or perhaps yourself in these leisure suits, right? But leisure suits were made out of polyester, and you couldn't drink and smoke in leisure suits because the ash falls off the end of the cigarette, and then they have a tendency to catch on fire while you're wearing them. And sometimes when I drank, I got taller. Sometimes when I drank, I got better looking. I drank in fabulous places like the Leaky Tiki Lounge. You can imagine the ambiance, huh? You know, the Hawaiian palm trees and the jukebox, and they had a lot of pea food back then. Pizza, pretzels, peanuts. They had these little ovens. You pay 75 cents for a pizza, and I'm drinking, and now my drinking's way out of control, and I start drinking in Compton, California. And now I'm starting to do things that I don't want to do, and I'm hurting people that I don't want to hurt. And I want to quit drinking, but I can't quit drinking because now I'm starting to get a real good picture of alcoholism. And one night I left Bill Mangold's Steakhouse in Compton, California. And I was on my way to Las Vegas to break the bank, and I got as far as the Compton Long Beach freeway border, and I was pulled over by the California Highway Patrol, and they saved my very life. Because I'd been praying, I didn't know what was the matter with me. I was hiding in the bushes with a loaded 45 semi-automatic pistol, and I was waiting for them to come, and I'm going crazy. And now my liver's, I'm 29 years old, and my liver's coming apart, and I'm going to the doctor, and he said, there seems to be something the matter with your liver. And of course, we never tell the doctors the truth, do they? You know, yeah, the doctor says, do you drink a little bit? And you say, yeah, doc, I drink a couple beers a day. And we'll lie to anybody. You know, it's easier for an alcoholic to climb a tree and tell a lie than it is for him to stand on the ground and tell the truth. And as luck would have it, I started, my wife was chasing me. My wife, my then wife would call around, and she'd call the hospitals. And that's what we do to our families. That's the kind of alcoholic I am. I put everybody else's life in danger. They're looking for me in the hospitals, and they're looking for me at the sheriff's department, and they're calling the bars, and they can't figure out where I am, and I don't even know where I am. And then I caught a break. I was arrested, and I have this argument with these four California Highway Patrolmen, because by then there was four of them there, and the argument went like something like this, as best as I can remember. They expected me to get in the car, and they got me hooked up, and I'm having an argument with them about who's going to get in the car and who's not going to get in the car. And all of a sudden, I had this moment of clarity, and I don't know why, but I always had this loaded 45 automatic in the front seat of my car, and that night I took it out of my belt and I put it under the seat, and what a gift, because these four highway patrolmen all had their guns pulled on me. And I got in the car and I went to the 3rd and Vignes Jail in downtown Los Angeles, and I saw my very first miracle. I'm drinking in Compton, California. I got a loaded 45 semi-automatic pistol under the seat. I'm half crazy. I'm drunk. I don't know where I'm going. I'm suffering from severe alcoholism. I'm 29 years old. My life's coming apart. And I can't do anything about it. And God intervened. I'm in jail that night in downtown Los Angeles, and on the 7th floor of the LA County Jail. And this, well, remember when I talked about my father was in the hospital, I used to visit him and they had him plugged in with wires. And I don't know, it's been quite a long time, perhaps maybe none of you have ever seen an alcoholic when he or she is really sick. And they're near the end and they're laying in these hospital beds, huh? And their stomachs are distended and they're yellow and their eyes are yellow because your liver's giving out. And that's what alcohol does to us. Destroys our liver and it takes everything we've got. And I'm standing in this holding cell in the LA County Jail. And this guy says, what are you in here for, kid? And I told him. And he said, oh, that's nothing. He said, look at me. I looked down at that bench he was laying on, and this guy had yellow eyes. And his nose was bulbous. And he had broken veins in his face. And his arms were real skinny. And he was dying of alcoholism, and I'd seen that before. That looked like my father several years before that in the hospital, in Harbor General Hospital. And I saw that. And a moment of clarity came about me, and I said, my God, if something doesn't happen here, that's the way I'm going to go. That's the way I'm going to go. That's the way we alcoholics all go. You know, sick and suffering, powerless over the disease of alcoholism. And I got out of that, and I left that jail that night, and something happened to me. I was a different guy. And I ended up in Compton, California, in the court. And when I got out of court, so the last time I was drinking in Compton, and I went back to Compton to go to court, so I'm straight out of Compton. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie, but I ran into a judge, and he gave me a break, and he said, I don't know what's the matter with you, Mr. Austin, but he said, it looks here like you might have an alcohol problem. And I got sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been praying for God to do something for me that I couldn't do for myself. And God intervened in a strange and mysterious way. And the gift that he gave me was the Monday Night Big Book Group of Bellflower, California. Now, July 22nd, July 23rd in 1876, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that I was going to meet the very man who was going to save my life. But that's who I met. I met a crooked little man with a crooked little hat and a crooked little cane. His name was Bill Honeycutt, and he was out of Long Beach, and he owned part of a circus. And Bill did what I think we should all do when we see these newcomers come into these meetings. Sometimes today we're so interested in ourselves that we forget about the new guy or the new gal that comes into the meeting. And Bill shook my hand, and he took me over to the literature table, and he used to say strange things to me, and he made sure I had a cup of coffee. And Bill had more Alcoholics Anonymous in him than I'll ever have in me in my entire life. But Bill was an angel. Now, I cannot tell you whether that guy in that jail cell was real or not. I don't know. But I know that God had started doing things for me that I couldn't do for myself. He started placing people in my life that were placed in my life in a manner in which it was somewhat perfect. And I started, Bill said, he took me out that night and a couple nights later, and he sat me down in a coffee shop and he said, so tell me where you've been, kid, and what you've been doing. And I told him, and he said, well, did you want to go to jail that night? Did you want to wreck that car? Did you want to put your family at risk? All these things that you just told me, did you want to do those things, Frank? And I said, no, Bill, I didn't want to do that. He said, did you want to drink have you ever drank when you didn't want to drink? And I said, yeah, Bill, that's right. It sounds to me, kid, like you're powerless over alcohol and your life's unmanageable. He said, can you see the unmanageability of your life, Frank? I said, yes, sir, I can. And he got me involved in service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my service commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill was a big service guy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill spoke in riddles, and I couldn't understand. Matter of fact, Bill was from Arkansas. He's from Benton, Arkansas, right up the street here. And now we moved to Arkansas about a year ago, and we bought our house from Devin and Terry Carr down there. Really, very super people. And Bill spoke in parables. Bill would say, you can't see until you can see, boy. And you can't hear until you can hear. I said, Bill, I can hear perfectly. He said, no, you can't. He said, because you're listening with your head and not with your heart. He said, in Alcoholics Anonymous, kid, there's a language here, and it's called the language of the heart. It's where the heart speaks and the heart listens. He said, only after your entrance to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous will you begin to listen with your heart. Will you begin to have a spiritual relationship with a power greater than yourself that will close your mind and open your heart? Oh, Bill. Then he gave me a rock. He said, Frank, I want you to have this rock. I said, why do I need that rock, Bill? This is a God rock, Frank. He said, because when trouble comes, and it surely will, you're going to need to rub this rock so God can hear. I thought, okay, Bill. And Bill got me in the service right away. Bill got me my first job as the assistant coffee maker in my home group. And that's a big time job when you're a guy like me, the assistant coffee maker, right? The only problem was the assistant coffee maker was armed. So my home group took this group conscience one night. You guys all have, the Grace Group has a group conscience, right? Where you all get together and make decisions about what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. And so my home group got together that night and they made a decision. They made a group conscience that the assistant coffee maker did not need to be armed. And I thought, so they asked Bill to ask me to take that pistol out of my belt and put it in my car. And it's a good thing because he said, you know, Frank, nobody's going to steal that coffee pot. And you're going to be the guy that's washing those ashtrays and nobody's going to steal them. He said, you're here to be of service. He said, and service is the only gateway to spirituality through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you match the two and follow the process, you will be able to live a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I thought, nah, that ain't going to happen, man. Maybe that'll happen for you, but that won't happen for me. It's been too tough coming up, but it took me too tough getting here, Bill. But it's not as bad as some other folks have had it. So I rub this rock and I'm in service in Alcoholics Anonymous and we're going to prisons and jails and institutions. And I got to be the coffee maker at the K2 ward at the VA hospital. And I got to talk to the other Vietnam veterans about their alcoholism. And they'd say, how long have you been sober? And I'd say something like 90 days, 6 months. And that was a mystery to them. They couldn't imagine 6 months, 90 days. They're trying to get 24 hours under their belt. They're shaking. And I've seen that. So my 18th month of sobriety, to kind of speed things up, I'm rubbing this rock so God can hear. My first son gets sick and he drifts off into a coma. And we went to Children's Hospital in Orange County, California. And I had taken some steps. I had moved towards the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I began to hear wonderful people. And in my third or fourth week in Alcoholics Anonymous, the speaker was Chuck Chamberlain, you know, the new guy that wrote The New Pair of Glasses. And back then we used to have coffee after the meeting, right? But when you're 29 years old, you can drink a pot of coffee and eat two pieces of pie and still go to sleep. When you're 73, you can't do that stuff. So anyway, I'm listening to Chuck and I'm sitting in this meeting listening to Chuck talk. And after the meeting, we're out having coffee, and everybody said, did you hear what Chuck said? I said, I heard every word he said. They said, can you explain it? I said, I have no idea. I don't understand. All I know is he looks good, and he's talking about a God that I'm having trouble believing in, and he's talking about steps that I don't know how to take. And he's telling me about things that happened in his life that are difficult for me. And little by little, meeting by meeting, step by step, service commitment by service commitment, I ended up with the grace of God, and I ended up in Children's Hospital with my son. He got bit by a mosquito, and I had just enough sobriety in me to reach in my pocket and rub that rock. Because that boy went into a coma, and he was in a coma for 15 days. And another miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous showed up, because I didn't want to drink. And Bill shows up, and he said, you know, Frank, in situations like this, guys like you drink. He said, when the tough gets going, guys like you drink unless you got a God in your life and 12 steps. And then you people came to Children's Hospital in Alcoholics in Orange County, California. You came on your own. Nobody asked you to come. I sit in the parents' lounge and you people had come and And we were sleeping in a chair, and my son's in a coma. And I'm rubbing this rock so God can hear. And Bill says, Frank, drinking is not going to make this any better. When you drink, everything gets worse. And so they put a trach in that boy's throat, and he was paralyzed, and we got him out of Children's Hospital, and he had 22 major surgeries. He died twice on the operating table, and I lost everything, except my sobriety. No, that's not correct. We still had a home to live in. We still had a roof over our head. We still had a car, and we still had food, and we still had some people that were helping us. But I never drank. Continued to go to meetings and stayed close. In each one of those surgeries, when my son would talk, he'd put his finger over his throat. He had the trach for 3 years. He had to put his finger over his throat. You've seen people like that. And he puts his finger over his throat, and he says, "Hi, Dad. How are you?" And that'll break your heart. I lost that boy 2 years ago. He passed away of a massive heart attack at 44 years old. But you wonder. A couple of years later, he's up and he's moving, and I got to be a good dad, and I got to be a sober dad. I've just made so many mistakes along the way. But I've always been in service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always had a commitment someplace. In some jail or some prison or some halfway house or something. I'm always doing something in Alcoholics Anonymous because that's what I was taught. Service seems to be the key for me. My last sponsor was a guy named Sandy Beach. Sandy Beach was my sponsor for 8 years. And Sandy said, "The highest you're ever going to get here, kid, is servant." That's it. And oh my God, what a gift. Because I watched men and women go before me, and I watched their lives, their simple lives, be put back together one step and one meeting at a time. A couple of years later, my second son was born with a birth defect called biliary atresia. We're almost about 10 years sober now, and we went back to Children's Hospital. In the cumulative days, we've been sober and stayed in Children's Hospital in Orange County for a total of 18 months. That's a long time. Sleeping in them chairs, but I'll tell you what happened to me one night. My kid's in the hospital bed and I can't sleep, and I walk down the hall. I'm walking down the hall, I'm just a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you people had come. And you'd given me the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous one more time. And I felt undeservedly so. How could these people love me? How could they give of themselves in this manner so that I could live? That's what we do here. We give to each other so that you can live. It was given to us freely, for fun and for free. So I'm walking down the hall one night, and I run into this kid, and he's bald-headed. He's got this cancer bottle. He's toting this bottle. And we're talking, and I said, "What's going on, pal?" And we sat down in the hall, and he explained to me and told me his name. And he said, "You know I've got cancer, don't you?" I said, "Nah, I didn't know that." And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, tell me, come out, what your hopes and dreams are." He said, "You know, sir," he said, "I want to make it till I'm," he said, "I'm nine now." I said, "Nine." He said, "I want to make it till I'm 10. I said, "Why do you want to be 10? He said, "Because when you're 10, you can play Little League Baseball." Wow. And we complain. We don't get the Cadillac, or we don't get the girl, or we don't get the stereo, or we don't get the job, or we don't get it, whatever it is. And all he wanted to be was 10. So we moved on, and we moved to Visalia, and my second son died when he was 23 and a half months old, and I went to the doctor's office, and I took my little son's body out of his mother's arms, and I kissed his cheek goodbye, and I was thankful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because see, all I get is right here, right now. That's all I get, man. That's all I get, right here, right now. I don't get tomorrow. I don't get yesterday. I just get right here, right now. That's all I get. their mother and I didn't make it, and I was able to, through the help of Alcoholics Anonymous and some wonderful sponsors, to treat my first wife with dignity and kindness. And they used to teach me, you got to teach a knucklehead like me things. So don't ever say anything bad about your former wife. It's not necessary. Don't speak behind her back. Don't say anything terrible about her, because that's the mother of your children. These are the lessons. Dignity and respect towards others. Because I hadn't been a perfect sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've never met one. So I went back to Visalia one day to the cemetery, and I'm standing at the cemetery, and I don't know why I'm there. But I'm sober, and I'm asking God, and God says, this voice comes to me, because sometimes God talks to me. And I said, God, I don't know why I'm here. And he said, Frank, you're here because you need to know that your son has been with me since he left the face of the earth. I've had his soul in my hands, and he's in good care. And I said, God, I still don't quite understand. And he said, listen, Frank, here's how the deal works, or something like that. He said, you're kind of a knucklehead. He said, and I gave you a lot of chances to come to me, but you wouldn't come to me. He said, so I sent you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I gave you a crooked little man with a crooked little hat and a crooked little cane and 12 steps and actions that you wouldn't necessarily take. And through that process, you've been able to find a relationship with me. Well, it's been empty till then. So moved on, had a wonderful job, and things didn't go well. And that was, as I mentioned to you, about the ex-wife and all that stuff. And I was single for a long time, and I'm wandering around this now. Maggie was here last week, right, Debbie? Maggie spoke last week, right, Debbie? And Josh, you guys heard my wife last week.
I did.
I won't bore you with the true story about what happened, Debbie, about how we met. My story about how we met and where we met is a little different than hers. I thought at one time that she said things that she said she never said. And I'm going to get in a lot of trouble here, and she's in the next room, and I'll pay for this in about 15 minutes, but that's okay. We love each other now, and we met in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we dated for a year. We had no relationship other than dates for a year. We just went to meetings and got to know each other for a year, and we got married, and some of you were at our wedding. And along the way, we've stayed members of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've always been in service. Through the years, we've spoken, and we've had service commitments with a lot of you folks in a lot of different places. Some of you have been to meetings with us in Salvation Army. Some of you have been to meetings with us in Folsom Prison. We did big book studies in Folsom Prison for 7 years. My wife was the coordinator of the Sacramento County Jail. As John calls it, it's a high-rise gated community in downtown Sacramento. And everybody wears orange. They all wear the same clothes, right? But you get in those meetings upstairs, and you can see the real need for alcoholism. And my wife says this, she was told this, that sometimes where God is most needed, God is most wanted, and God becomes most present. And that's where God becomes most present to us. I did a big book study. I did a big book study in a homeless veteran shelter for 3 or 4 years because I'm a veteran, and because I know those young kids coming back had no place to go, and they're dying of alcoholism, and they're confused about their PTSD and alcoholism, and they don't know which is what and what's up. And the only gift that we have is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in this big book. Maggie has had some wonderful experiences, and so have I, up there in that fourth and seventh floor in the Sacramento County Jail. And we live a life beyond our wildest dreams. And I'm sitting in this restaurant one day, and I just finished having my heart checked with a cardiologist. And he said, you're good to go, Frank. He said, for your age, you're in perfect shape. And we went down to a restaurant, and we'd been going to meetings, and we'd been in service, and we'd been in and out of these jails and halfway houses, Volunteers of America, and just trying to give away so freely what we were given. Sometimes what we hear is, who we really are. Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes is just one beggar showing the other beggar where the bread is. That's how simple it gets to be. It's not complicated. It's just one beggar showing the other beggar where the bread is. So sitting in this restaurant, my phone rings and says, Frank, your oldest son, Gordon, passed away this morning. He had a massive heart attack. And life leaves you for a moment. You got no place to go. And for just a moment, you pray, you stop, and you do what you've been told. And I was lucky to find some wonderful members of Alcoholics Anonymous and have my wonderful wife there. We talked about what we should do, and I wasn't going to go fly to Wyoming until the next day. And that night, I'll tell you how Alcoholics Anonymous works once again. That night, there were six men in my living room that afternoon. You've always been there for me, always. Dan called, Dan, the fellow I spoke about earlier, and we've been close for a lot of years. Dan's one of those guys that I speak to, and he speaks to me. On those nights, like Kurt will know, and perhaps Nelson will know, and some of you others will know, there's just nights when you can't sleep. There's just nights when the demons come and you can't shut them up. And you know that they're not real. You know you lived it. But it's outside Alcoholics Anonymous. However, those of us that have had the opportunity to find comfort in Alcoholics Anonymous can find those guys. And there's a group of men that I hang out with. There's seven or eight of these guys that when we're in trouble in those areas, and you don't need to hear all the stories that happened when in September of 1966, when so-and-so got, you don't need to hear all that stuff. But we need to tell each other. Kurt knows what I'm talking about. There's a special thing in the Marine Corps we have for each other. But these men have saved my life continually because they're all sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you six men came to my house that night and you took me to a meeting and you wouldn't leave me alone. Why do I love Alcoholics Anonymous? Shouldn't be any question about that. Got to Wyoming and went to the funeral home, and I knew that I had been prepared. We'd been reading Ram Dass, and we'd been reading the letter that he wrote. And I spoke at Founders Day at Alcoholics Anonymous a couple years ago. I spoke 5 weeks before my son passed away, and we're talking, and I'd heard this speaker, and she. Her husband was a Marine, and he passed away, and this Master Gunnery Sergeant called her one day. And she's telling this story. This is before my son died. And the Master Gunnery Sergeant tells her, Deb, you don't need to worry, because in my humble opinion, Deb, God does not take people. God receives them. God receives their souls. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear this. Wow. 5 weeks later, this incident happens, and I come to the stark realization that God did not take my child. God received his soul. And you can stay sober and you don't drink. And one of my sponsees from Fallon, Nevada, drove over there, and we just went to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and we didn't drink, and we took the steps, and every day we live one day at a time. My sponsor is a guy named Tom Hicken. I don't know if Tom made the meeting or not, but Tom has 50 years of sobriety. Tom lives in Akron, Ohio. And Tom has four brothers, and there's five of them all at one time in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, plus their father. There's five brothers and their father. in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. People say miracles are past us. I don't believe that. I see them all the time. But sometimes I'm blinded by fear and I'm deafened by hatred. And I surround myself with unrealistic resentments. And all that stuff does is separate me from you. And Sandy used to say, when I met Sandy, I told him the story about my first son. And he said, Frank, here's my understanding. He said, Frank, you want to know why? And I said, yes, Sandy, I would like to know why. He said, Frank, you'll never know why. He said, you just have to ask God to be relieved of the obsession to know why. I thought, that's too simple, Sandy. Yet that's the way it goes. You know, so you drink a lot of lousy coffee and you eat a lot of lousy jelly donuts and you hang out with each other and you love one another and you respect one another and you don't talk about other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't gossip. And Tom and his brothers have been so kind to me. And Tom, we went back and celebrated his 50th anniversary in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what a wonderful time we had. For his 50th anniversary in Alcoholics Anonymous. Victor was there, Jay was there, a lot of the guys were there, John. And we had a giant family of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's my little Tom Hicken, 50 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what's good about Tom Hicken? Tom's a Catholic boy. And he goes to meetings as often as he possibly can. But what's really cool about having a good Catholic for a sponsor is he prays for me every day. I have a sponsor that prays for me every day. Can you imagine that? I hope you become so lucky that you have a sponsor that prays for you every day. He prays for my wife every day, prays for my family every day. And that's a wonderful thing to have a wonderful sponsor. He's a very spiritual man. You can tell. Sometimes he's here on the earth and sometimes he's just in another place. If you hang out with him long enough, you can feel the distance between him and the earth, and you can see that there's something different about him. Something's changed as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's grown so far spiritually. He said, the only thing I can do is grow more. Last year we went up there and Victor and we went, I don't know why we were there, but we went up. Victor spoke and Jay spoke and they have this meeting and we all got together and there's about 250, 300 people that these people feed in Akron, Ohio, and they get together and they cook 30, I don't know, Victor, 35, 40, 50 turkeys, something like that. And they give it all away and they give it away for free. They just give it away for free and they don't ask, they never ask anything from anybody. They just give it for free because it's for fun and for freedom because they love Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I learned my lessons, watching men like that give of themselves so that others could live. Maggie and I have been married for what seems to be quite a long time. It's quite a wonderful number of years. And we, after my son died, we started looking about where we live. And our grandson moved here to Clinton, Arkansas a couple years before. We have a son that goes to UCA out here. He's in the master's program in history. And six, 7 months ago, my wife said, can you tell us about the women's meeting at the jail? And they said, there is no women's meeting at the jail. And if you know my wife, that's not going to go. So we end up a couple of weeks later through the process of being down at the jail talking to the lieutenant about, can we start a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in the Faulkner County Jail? And he said, of course you can. We've been waiting for you. We don't know why there hasn't been a meeting here. A couple of weeks later, my wife has 30 women in our living room over here, and I call it estrogen night. You know, we used to have a meeting at home when she had her women. She had her women's group once a month, and there was 15, 16 women. And the estrogen was so high, I had to leave the meeting. I just had to get out of the house and go to the garage. But we love Alcoholics Anonymous. And so now there's a women's meeting in the Faulkner County Jail once a week. And and that's on Tuesday nights. But right now it's shut down because of this COVID thing. And in I don't know how many of you ever been to Akron. In the intergroup office in Akron, there's this little book, and it's up in the corner, and it's called The Greatest Thing in the World. It's by Henry Drummond. And the reason I bring that up is because if you go to intergroup office in Akron, and you look at the, they have a full display of the books that Bill and Bob read before the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to try and seek spiritual answers. And this was one of the books that they read together. They would take home books. And inside this book, they talk about the greatest thing in the world being love. It says, after contracting love with these things, Paul, in three very short verses, gives us the amazing analysis of what this supreme thing is. Supreme thing. Love is a supreme thing. When you notice, we have the common names. It says, love is patient, love is kind, love is generous, love is filled with humility, love is courteous, love is unselfish, love is of good temper, love is of guilelessness, and love is of serenity. So if I can become patient, kind, generous, humble, courteous, and unselfish, good-tempered, and guileless, and serene, maybe I can receive the supreme gift, the stature of the perfect one. And all those things lay between the pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Bob spoke quite often in his last talk when he's talking to Bill. He said something such as this. He said, we all know what love is, and we all know what service is. I don't know how much you love Alcoholics Anonymous or how much you love one another. It's apparent that there's a wonderful group all over the world. There's, you people have been so wonderful to us. We moved here, and unbeknownst to us, we ended up buying our home from the folks that are on the screen here, and they came over the other day, and I don't know, you know, we just live a wonderful life here. It's a beautiful place to live, and we're very thankful and very kind. For me, the Lord works in strange and mysterious ways. Alcoholics Anonymous seems to me to be a miracle shrouded in mystery. I don't know how I got here. All the years, I don't know how I got here. Except by the course of a kind of loving God that was willing to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And he continued to send wonderful people my way. He's put angels in my life my whole life, but I just couldn't see them. And now most of the time, every once in a while, if I think right and I do my prayer and meditation, I can see them. I'll close with this. My wife and I, each and every day, a couple of years ago, we were, I don't know, where we were flying someplace to talk, and we were hanging out with Glennis and Jerome Scott. And Jerome's got 47 years now in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was there at Akron for his 45th year when they asked us to come and speak at Founders Day. And so we asked Jerome, can you tell us what you do? What do you do? And he said, Frank, each and every day we get together and we open different literature, spiritual literature. We open the big book, or we open the 12 and 12, or we open the daily reflections, or we read something, and then we pray together. And then I pray out loud for my wife. I ask God to bless my wife. And I say things such as that. And I thank God each and every day for the gifts that I've been given for that day. So that's what we do each and every day. That's how we start our day. We read several pieces of literature. We read this book. It's by Meg, and it's not AA approved literature, but there's a little section in here that we opened this morning, and it's in reference to Chuck C. And Chuck C talks about spontaneous life. He says, I have a little trick that I wouldn't trade for $1 million. I share everything in my life with God, everything, the good, the bad, and the indifferent. I share it and I dump it. For instance, when I do a lousy stunt, which I do once in a while, I take it into my closet with me and I say, look, Dad, look what I did yesterday. Isn't that a lousy thing for a guy like me to do? With your help, I'll do better. Sure, thank you. And I dump it. I never pick it up again. When a good thing happens, I do the same thing with it. I say, look, Father, isn't that beautiful? It couldn't happen to a bum like me, but it did. And I know where it came from. So thank you, God. And I dump that. I think it's just as tough on us to try to carry this so-called good as well as the so-called bad. We don't need either one of them, because this life should be spontaneous. We don't need any impediments. Get rid of the whole business and start each day anew, and with no yesterdays and no tomorrow. Thanks for having me, you guys. I love you very much. Appreciate it.